When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hello and welcome to Ticket for One, the podcast that celebrates female solo travel. My name is Kate Wills, I'm a travel journalist, and each week I'm going to be speaking to a woman who inspires me about her adventures alone. Today's guest is the author Jessie Burton. In 2009, while working as a temp and trying to be an actress, Jessie took a trip to Amsterdam, which would change her life. Inspired by an elaborate doll's house in the Rijksmuseum there, she began to write her debut novel, The Miniaturist, on the tube to work and from her desk at her day job. It went on to be a huge bestseller, bought by over a million people and turned into a TV series for the BBC. But after such stratospheric and sudden success, Jessie experienced a period of anxiety and depression, alongside the breakup of a long-term relationship, all of which became the catalyst for a trip by herself to South America. Jessie's second book, The Muse, was partly set in Spain, where she lived alone as a student, and her third novel, The Confession, which comes out in paperback today, is based between London, where Jessie lives, and Los Angeles and New York, where she's travelled recently. So I was really excited to interview Jessie about how she turns her solo travels into inspiration for her writing. We also talked about the best earplugs, why bodegas and chemists are better than museums, and why what you do when you get home from a trip is almost as important as what happens when you're there. Jessie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I feel like you're actually the perfect person to talk about this topic because I know that travel is not only an important part of your life, but it's also been a big part of your work as well.
Yeah, there's always a different location in my novels.
Yeah, I love that. So let's start at the beginning because it was a trip to Amsterdam that first inspired the idea behind your first novel, The Miniaturist. Can you tell us a bit about that trip? Or maybe it was a few trips.
So it was 2009. And my then boyfriend suggested that we go to Amsterdam for a mini break. Very Bridget Jones.
must be love.
Yeah, we're not actually together anymore. So we went and I'd never been, he'd never been. And then he said he wanted to go to the Rijksmuseum, which is one of the major museums in the city, but not just really Amsterdam, but in the world. I think it's an astonishing repository of treasures. And that was when I saw the Cabinet House that became kind of like one of the central characters, really, of the first novel, The Miniaturist, which is a book about this young bride, Nella, who gets sent all these miniatures to decorate her cabinet house that start predicting her future. But yeah, so it was there that I saw it, and it was just this beautiful object. And back in those days, you weren't allowed to take photos. And I kept getting in trouble with the security guard because I was genuinely immediately drawn to it magnetically. And I wanted to know more about it. And that's when I started connecting it to the city itself, because the doll's house was built in 1686. So I started looking around the city for kind of clues of the 17th century life. And it's really easy in Amsterdam, as I'm sure your listeners know, it's such a beautifully preserved old centre. So yeah, it all sort of started there. And then because I was, I had a job back in London, I couldn't get over there at all. I really didn't have the opportunity to go back until I'd nearly finished the book three times to go and check some stuff about 2-3 years later.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you did most of it just from research and and memory.
Yeah.
What an amazing idea to have. When you were kind of captivated by that Doll's House room in the Rijksmuseum, did you kind of immediately think, oh, that would be a really great novel? Or did it kind of percolate for a while? And
I definitely didn't think, oh, this is going to be a great novel. I thought it was a cool story, like like the idea of this woman owning this house that she spent so much money on. Like, it was the equivalent of one of those big Amsterdam townhouses. Over about 19 years, she spent that money. And the psychology behind making all these little beds you can't sleep in and all this beautiful food and pottery and chairs and paintings and candlesticks and a working fountain and all these other rooms you can't even see when you look at it. They're all hidden in different bits of the wall and in the floor of it. And I just thought, what the hell is going on there? And there was something sustaining about the Cabinet House over the next sort of, how long was it, 5 years that it took me to write the book. But certainly at the time, it was more a genuine kind of amateur fascination with the city of Amsterdam and the history of Amsterdam, rather than this is going to be my novel. It just started as a story, really.
Yeah, wow. And I've actually, after I read the book, I went to Amsterdam and kind of had a look at the Doll's House. And I've noticed that room is so busy now. And I always am like, God, I bet all these people have read the miniatures too. And that's why they're in it. It's like the busiest room in that museum, apart from the painting.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes.
Yeah.
People send me photos of it. And they do say that some of the staff there on security guards are like, oh, yeah, do you want to see the house? But it's a permanent exhibit there because I think it is just such a beautiful document as well of the life of a fairly wealthy merchant in late 17th century Europe. So it's quite a kind of little peephole, I suppose, into a way of life.
There's so much in that museum. It's just stacks, isn't there? It's so cool that you picked out that one bit. And I know lots of people are kind of doing miniaturist tours of Amsterdam now and kind of following the places mentioned in the book. But what would be like your favourite thing?
I mean, one of the nicest things to do, and it is a bit sort of touristy, but also, you know what? It's the city dwellers themselves are using the canals all the time. Like, it's a maritime city, but it's to get on the canals and use a boat to go through not just the old part known as the Golden Bend and the Jordan, but, you know, round out to the east and to the west. It's just such a lovely way of seeing the city. And I love going to the old church as well. I think it's got the oldest roof in Europe. I think it's like 13th century wood. And on the ceiling, you can still see there are paintings of saints of goldsmithery and the saints of like ocean goers and things like that, because of course it's such a city that's connected to the water and to money. So I love doing that, but also just like a ramble through the old bits, and there's always a lovely shop. Like, they're really good on their design touch. And I just love doing that and, you know, just getting a beer and just like swinging your legs over the side of the canal and just seeing life go by. It's you know, I mean, that's when the weather's nice, obviously. It's a beautiful one as well for a nighttime stroll, because they have this thing that I think is so interesting. It's so different to the Brits, which is that their windows are so exposed. So you can like turn your head and you can just look through. And it is a bit like looking into a doll's house, all these little scenes, or like looking through an advent calendar. People don't seem to mind being on show. So it's good if you're nosy.
It's true, isn't it? And they've sort of normally got like really chic interiors as well, as I recall.
Yeah, very lovely interiors.
And in terms of solo travel, I remember reading an article that you wrote a few years ago now about a trip that you took by yourself to South America. What was happening in your life that kind of made you want to go away by yourself at that point, and how did you find the experience?
Well, the first reason I was there was because I was invited to take part in the Hay Festival Colombia. So that was an opportunity I could never turn down, and I'd always wanted to go to Colombia. So in some ways it was always going to be solo. Like, I suppose I could have taken a friend or something, but so I found myself out there having been flown out by the Hay Festival, which is kind of amazing. but I was recently single by the chap who took me to Amsterdam, actually. So
that one. Okay.
So we'd split up and we'd been together for 8 years. And so I suppose it was the first time in my adult life that I had financial means of my own and no dependence, no commitments. I just finished a novel. So when you are a writer and you've finished a book, there is an enormous sense of a burden being lifted. So I just sort of felt now's the time, and it chimed in obviously with being there for the Hay Festival. I decided I wanted to go to Suriname, which is a tiny country just wedged between the Guyanas on the east coast or northeast coast of the continent of South America, just above Brazil. And it used to be the former colony of the Dutch, of the Netherlands. So I wanted to go and see where all the sugar plantations had been that kind of fueled, if you like, the miniaturist subplot, because obviously they were so wealthy from their sugar. So there was a kind of literary point going, but also, I guess, yeah, like an existential, like an adventure on my own.
Yeah, wow. I mean, I'd never even heard of Suriname. So what was it like there? Does it get many tourists?
It was a challenge because they don't speak English, really, because of colonialism. Their official language is Dutch, and then Suriname and Tongo. And if you have a smattering of French or Spanish, you might be able to get by, unless you are fluent in Dutch, which I am not. So that was interesting. yeah. And it's very humid. Place, and also it's about 70% water, so you're going to be going around on like in a boat or maybe in a plane, a water plane, less so on roads. It's very swampy, it's covered in rainforest, there's a lot of mangroves, a lot of piranhas, and it was a place that for my money it felt like, and it was quite thrilling as a result, that health and safety or like strict rules about what you could and couldn't do hadn't quite been, I don't know, established. So, you know, you'd get to some jetty or old plantation that was now the jungle had reclaimed, and you, the way of getting on it was just, I mean, honestly, like rotting wood that was just like giving way into the swamp, which actually made it very, very exciting.
Yeah. And was that your first experience kind of traveling alone, or had you done bits of it before?
I mean, I had lived alone in Spain as part of my degree, so back when I was like 20, but that was quite different because, you know, I speak Spanish and I was working at a school, so there's a kind of infrastructure, whereas this was very much like everything I had to do, I had to sort out on my own. I had like those sometimes I would like pre-do a journey in daylight so that I knew what I was doing at dawn when there wouldn't be any light to like know where I was going.
That's a good idea. That's such a good tip, actually. I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah.
Everything looks scarier in the dark, doesn't it? That's why I always try not to arrive in a place if you can when it's dark, because you're like, oh, this looks so sinister. And then in the morning you're like, it's actually totally fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a field.
Yeah.
When you're on your own, and I think as well as a woman, I think, you know, you do sometimes feel more vulnerable. It doesn't hurt being prepared. But yeah, you have to do everything. And there was a really ropey moment early on. So there was normally you can hope that like there'll be a hole in the wall ATM somewhere that either takes visas or MasterCard. Suriname didn't. There was something about it, about the banks, that my cards were being rejected and I didn't have any means of like getting any money out. And then I tried one more time, like definitely like keeping cool about it, like just being like, you know, there's no point getting upset about this, even though I'm here for like a week and I don't have any money, because you can't get the money outside the country. And then I walked away, and then something made me just like go back and check. And about 5 minutes after I'd done everything, my money had been like spewed out by the ATM.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you. Thank you, the gods.
Wow.
And that got me through the week. But I also think sometimes when you're on your own, it's really interesting, like how you may react differently. If I've been with somebody else, I may have panicked because I felt like I could hand over the responsibility to them to deal with it. Whereas it was just like, well, I really have to be the grown up here and deal with this, because, you know, it's really quite serious. Like there's no money.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Maybe it does kind of give you a bit more of a kind of like calm and sort of more responsible, because it is just just you to fall back on. And what is it that you love about experiencing a place by yourself? Because it is quite a different thing, isn't it, to being with friends or being with a boyfriend?
Absolutely, it's very different. And I think, well, the pros are, you know, you're on your own schedule, you can do whatever you want whenever you want it. If you don't want to do anything, you can just lie around in your hotel room or your rental place. Or if you want to do 500 things in one day, that's absolutely your prerogative. And also, I think there's, you know, a time to just sort of meditate and be on your own and enjoy your own company, which I have to really because I'm a novelist. I spend a lot of my time alone. And I'm also an only child, so I'm quite used to it. But obviously, sometimes it can be a bit tiring because you don't have someone to share it with or to split the load of planning or if difficult things happen. And I often, what I do is I'll often have a really lovely big lunch out. I tend not to, when I'm on my own traveling, eat dinner out. There's something I still find challenging about, and I have done it because you have to, but like eating alone in a restaurant, and depending on the restaurant, like sometimes they really make you feel like you're taking up a good space that could have been taken for two or three. So I often enjoy the mornings and the afternoons and maybe have a quieter meal somewhere else. And I just, sometimes I think when you're traveling, there's a panic that you have to absorb everything. You have to be like living in the moment, enjoy this because it's not going to last forever. And I think that's a really sort of counterproductive pressure to put on yourself when you're away. You're not going to like magically transform your personality by being in a beautiful place or a culturally stimulating place. You're still you. But I think it's the way it works its way over on you. It's magic onto you. Often is only noticed when you come back home. So it's a bit like meditation or exercise, not always easy in the moment. And then actually what you're doing is actually, I don't know, imbuing your memories and your mind with pleasurable things that you can recall later. Possible in the moment to absorb it all, especially, and it can be quite tiring. I mean, it's a privileged thing to say, like travel is fatiguing, but it can be, and you have to be easy on yourself and not try and tick 17 things off your list every day.
That's such a good point. I think especially as a lot of women, they go on solo trips when they're kind of, they've maybe had like a big life event, like a breakup or something like that. And you go away really kind of thinking, oh, this trip's really going to change me, kind of the eat, pray, love effect. And then you sort of feel disappointed when obviously you get there and you're just exactly the same person. So that's really true, I think, about sometimes you don't always notice until you get home how it has affected you.
Especially when, because when you're in a situation, it's like anything, you need time afterwards to process it. But it is hard in the moment where you think you're supposed to be like either having like your Instagram worthy experience or, you know, meeting new people. And it's not always easy to do that. So
definitely. Yeah. And you know, talking of challenging times, you know, you've spoken very openly before about anxiety, depression, and I know that, you know, traveling, especially traveling alone, but traveling in general can kind of exacerbate those feelings. You know, have you found that, and what do you kind of try and do to overcome them?
Oh, well, I mean, sometimes I think if I'm feeling vulnerable, I won't push myself to do lots of things. And I think if you're feeling that might be happening, you have to understand that those feelings, particularly anxiety, maybe depression is a different creature, but, you know, that they will pass, like a moment of panic or a moment of anxiety will pass. And it is a tricky one, that, because sometimes you think you're going to go away in order to kind of escape problems or things that make you anxious, but of course you carry them in yourself. I mean, I just sort of, like I said, I sort of keep close to where I'm staying, or I make sure I've got lots of water on board and sleeping, and not sort of pushing myself perhaps into too unfamiliar situations. But I think the thing is to just be aware and accepting that, you know, going somewhere new, you know, isn't going to change how you might feel. It's a much slower process. It works on you so much more slowly.
And maybe more deeply as well.
Exactly.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger. Feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And then let's talk about your most recent book, The Confession, because that's set between London and LA and also a little bit in New York. So did you kind of spend time over in the US for research and what inspires you about those cities?
It really makes me laugh that LA has become this like big setting in The Confession, because I think I was there for all of like 5 days in my whole life.
Oh, really? A memorable 5 days, though, clearly.
It really was. And it's so funny because I know New York fairly well. I've been lucky enough to be there a few times because of my American publishers being over there and doing promotion for the book. And I have a very good friend who lives in New York. But LA was like a whole different kettle of fish. I was like, my eyes were on stalks. I was like, that angel like turns up and is like, what is this wonderland? But at the same time, I felt it to be quite, not repellent, that's not the word, but like difficult. Like I was like, I couldn't penetrate it. I was like, I don't, when you're in New York, you can be on foot. So many cities are on, you know, are accessible on foot, just like London. But there, it took me a while to kind of understand about, you know, how all the different zones of LA work and the little villagey vibe and all of that stuff. And of course, I would never presume to know the city. Where I wrote the city, I wrote it through the eyes of a young woman called Elise, who is very young. She's like 22, I think, in the book. I think she turns about 23 in the book. And she's in this kind of magical land where people are making themselves up literally as they go along, changing their names, getting movie careers, going through five husbands, all that kind of generative, like renewal and make-believe that is, you know, Hollywood. And I think I'm quite drawn to that as a former actress and as a writer who just likes making stuff up. And, you know, the weather is stunning, the people are quite eccentric. And I think the West Coast gets a kind of bad rap for being, you know, less intellectual or all a bit sort of California bimbo compared to like, say, the East Coast of America. But actually, there's some very, very smart people there, obviously. So that was fun to write as well, that, you know, these people are smart. It was just a fantasy. Like I knew New York and I know London, obviously, like the back of my hand. I was born here. But LA was like this fantasy setting, this fabulous landscape where people have beautiful turquoise pools in their garden and everyone's beautiful but also really damaged. And you
know, yeah, it does have that seedy undercurrent to it. Anyway, yeah. I think that's cool. Did you go there knowing that you were going to set part of the book there? Or was it?
No.
I was. You just experienced those things.
I was just like, this place is bonkers. I loved it. I did like it. I really did. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm slagging LA off, but like, I just was like, so I went twice. Once I was there for a historical fiction conference, very briefly. And then I came back to do some TV promotion for The Miniaturist being aired out in America, the TV series. The second time I was like, okay, I get this place a bit better now. Like, it's a place where it's still got that like old gold rush kind of mentality. Like, you can go out there and make your fortune, boy. Like, whether or not that's true, but it's got that feel to it. And it is interesting to me that I only spent 6 days there and yet set, you know, half a book there. Whereas like The Muse, which is set in half in South Spain, I lived there for a very long time and I know that landscape so much better, but it just is really interesting just on a, from a writing perspective, that you can literally visit a place maybe one day and then it has this, it works its way on into you.
Yeah. That, do you think there is a bit of a knack to doing that though? Like, do you kind of try and experience a place like being very open to it and being very receptive so that these ideas and inspirations can form?
That's a really good question. What attitude do you take to a place when you turn up? I mean, I do think I'm quite a curious person and I'm quite nosy and I really love going to local supermarkets. I always think like going into the local shop, like forget the museums and the galleries, it's like the bodegas. That's where real life is happening.
That's so true. And chemists. I love chemists in foreign cities.
Give me a French chemist. Totally. I think, yeah, you do have to go with a sort of, okay, it's all going to be on your terms, city or country, not mine. Like, and as soon as you do that, as soon as you let go, and that's kind of what I learned when I was in Suriname. I was like, obviously going on my own, I was a little uptight. And then I was just like, you know what, just relax. Like, you know, nothing bad's going to happen if your schedule is a bit out. And actually, when you let the, unloosen the knots, if you like, things happen of their own accord that are so beautiful because you've not planned them. They happen to you because you've kind of let yourself relax. You've let the barriers down so that new experiences can come in. And as for like how on earth it happens that you absorb it to write about it, I mean, I don't know. I think that's a very kind of difficult question to answer. But as a normal person traveling, I love just wandering around. Like, always take the first morning to just like walk around and not just like the big hotspot places, but just the normal streets. And as we've just said, like going to the local shops and that kind of stuff.
Definitely. Are you the type of writer who always carries a notebook and you're kind of overhearing conversations or getting inspired?
No, I'm not. I you know what? I take a notebook. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to take my moleskin. Like, really lovely Mont Blanc. I don't actually have a Mont Blanc then. And then, do I write anything? No, I do not.
Yeah.
I don't write a thing. I just sit around and I have a Prosecco or whatever it is. And I know myself now. I know to just like let it be easy. Like, just don't go around like trying to journalist out the place. Just relax.
Just absorb it.
Yeah. Just trust myself that I, you know, of course, maybe sometimes I might write a couple of things down, maybe by the third day, but I don't like journal. I took my mum to Mexico and it was so sweet. She was like journaling every day, like what we'd done, and so cute. And I just wasn't writing anything. I can't even remember it.
Oh, it's okay. You've got her journal.
Yeah, exactly. She'll let me have it.
That's a good person to travel with. Have you done any other solo trips that you want to speak about, or are there any on your list that you'd like to do?
Do you know what? During this whole lockdown and this strange year we've had, I've sort of, it's almost like I thought it won't ever happen again, which is not a positive way of thinking. But the thought that we might be able to go away on big trips, like not little like hops over to France or Spain, but like the thought of getting on a long haul flight right now is daunting to me. You know, my partner is a very independent man. And we travel well together, touch wood, which means I don't know if I'd be doing any more solo trips in the foreseeable, because I'd quite like to go with him. And then like, we'd just split up for the day and do our own thing. And I learned that the hard way with an ex, which was just like, okay, we work best when we're not like trying to do what the other one wants to do as well.
Yeah.
You know, we go on holiday and we want to do different things. Like, I don't want to see 15 Romanesque churches. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I want to go to the French chemist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So at the moment, there's nothing on the horizon. I'm being very conservative about my travel, which is probably not what you want to hear.
No, but I think it can. This lockdown for me has actually been a really nice opportunity to get to know London a bit more and kind of explore home in a way that you don't when you're like jetting all around.
And I think, you know, there's been something quite humbling about how quiet the sky was. Just, you know, I've been very lucky with my book, and I've done a lot of plane journeys to all these amazing countries to sort of talk about my work and to sell my books. And there was a sense of relief in a way, and not having to get on a plane. I still really want to go to Montana, and I want to see those big open spaces. And I'd like to go to Iceland. I've always wanted to go to Montana. I don't know what it is, because I've got literally like no connections to that place at all. I think it's the nature, the landscape, geography is just so breathtaking and so different to like my own backyard. It's an understatement, but I'd love to do that one day. I want to do a big American trip like that, and I've always been drawn to Iceland. I think that's a cool place, and my partner is Australian, and you know, we were there last year, and that is a beautiful country, and I'd like to see more of that. But again, it's like this whole lockdown, like we can't, his family are in Melbourne and we can't.
That's so now. Hard. So tough for people with family abroad. Hopefully soon, though, or in the not too distant future.
I'd love to get there for winter. Everyone always goes on something
in the
country, but I always save up my holiday for December or January, because I'm like, I cannot do the UK in January. It's like depression personified.
Totally.
My good friend from university lives in Nairobi, and we actually were there this January, and I feel very, very lucky, because we were literally there about 3 weeks before lockdown happened in this country. And just either we would have had to stay out there, which wouldn't have been difficult, but I guess in the long term would have. But the whole thing of like getting that gorgeous experience, and then it, you know, this year just like morphing into this completely unexpected, whatever it is, you know, that we're going through.
So you got to have a kind of taste of adventure before everything locked down.
I feel now like I'm seeing people's pics on the gram. You know, they're in France and Spain and Santorini, and it looked stunning. But I just think, you know what? Like, we got lucky in January. Like, we don't need to jump on a plane right now. And like we were just discussing earlier, like, it's the whole experience of 2020 has changed perhaps what I feel about travel. And I do feel for places like Scotland and, you know, the southwest of England, where a lot of tourists are keep wanting to go to the beaches and the highlands. But one of the most beautiful holidays I've ever had was in Scotland. We just got lucky with the weather, even though if it had been raining, to be honest, it was so majestic, the landscape, that I wouldn't have minded. But yeah, you know, there's still a lot to be enjoyed locally.
Where in Scotland did you go?
We went to a island called Eileen Shona, which is actually a private island that you can rent houses on.
Wow.
Houses don't have electricity. So
that sounds amazing.
Mind-blowing. Like, we had like gas lamps we had to learn how to use, and gas cylinders for the cooker. And our house was the furthest away from the main jetty and the main house. And we took all our food with us in a wheelbarrow. Honestly, Kate, it was just like, because the weather was so beautiful, it was like we were on a Greek island, but kind of mixed with Narnia, because it was like Scottish, but with like Aegean coloured water. It was unreal. And the whole thing of like not being able to use your phone, not being able to call someone, text someone, not being able to plug in your phone, not being able to have electricity, you became very dependent on the, you know, the sunrise and then the sunset. And it was beautiful.
Wow, that sounds incredible. Like going back in time. Probably.
Yeah, it was. And I read more books in that week than I think I managed in a whole year.
Yeah, I was going to ask about books, actually, and whether you like to read things that are kind of set in the place or a writer from the place, or whether it's just, you know, an opportunity, as it is for many of us, to actually get some reading done when we go away.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think I'm always sort of a person who does things after the event. So if I've been somewhere, then I read about them when I come home, maybe keep them alive in my imagination.
Or write about them. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, real, I basically write a novel about them. But yeah, I know I tend to take, like you said, you know, the reading list that you really want to catch up on. And I actually quite like the sort of dissonance of like reading a book set in 18th century, I don't know, Florence, and yet you're in like uptown New York, or like, I love that kind of like hybridity. I don't feel like I need to read in theme with where I am.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, it's kind of nice to have a real disjunction between what you're reading and where you are. I remember reading like Anna Karenina on a beach.
Love it. That's where you need to be, because you need some time to get through those poems. That said, I did read Circe by Madeline Miller on the Scottish island of Eileen Shona. And obviously so much of Circe is about her island. And so that was kind of cool, because I was like, wow, I'm like, I look up and then I can just see these craggy rocks and trees and imagine all these little nymphs coming out and turning men to pigs. That was not planned.
So other than books, is there anything that you always pack on a trip?
Earplugs. Because I'm a very light speaker, and I've done a very thorough survey of the best earplugs that exist, and I can officially tell you that the best ones are Boots, muffles. Aww. I've been wearing them now for 7 years, and I think I have a psychosomatic dependency on them. I don't think I can sleep now without them, but they are so useful. They really block out all noise. So I'm never without that. I always take an optimistic notebook, I will confess, but I often write anything in. But like I said, maybe about by day 3 or 4, like there might be a little jotting in there. Other than that, like, I don't know, I try and take a slimmed down makeup bag. I mean, if it's a city break, if it's a like holiday thing, I'm just like, oh, I can't be bothered. I just wear some moisturizer. I also have a very severe latex allergy, so I can't wear swimwear. So I always take like all my, this is so boring, but like.
Wow, that must be difficult. Oh, so what do you wear to swim in?
Oh, well, sometimes like Victorian cotton vests. Just
cool.
Anything that doesn't have latex. And it's, let me tell you, very hard. I cannot believe someone used to corner the market in this. So there is a company, I think they're based in Utah. They might be the only Mormon bikini company, but they're called Decent Exposures. How modern.
Amazing.
And their swimwear isn't the most glamorous, but like I've had this problem since I was about 11. I can't wear snorkels, goggles, swimwear, anything that kind of comes into contact with my skin with heat. It literally makes it looks like I've been flayed. Like I just want to rip my skin off. So this company makes latex free swimwear. And I remember like on Instagram about a year ago, I put out this like pathetic plea, like, does anyone know? And, you know, people were very generously sending things like this company. And I was like, no, this is just swimwear made out of old plastic from the sea. It still has knicker elastic. It's not going to make any difference. And yeah, I never look particularly good on the beach, but to be honest, I really don't care, because if it means I can sunbathe, be in the sea, not worry that within 2 hours, I'm just going to be covered in welts, I don't care.
Skinny dipping is maybe the way forward for you.
Exactly.
Maybe a nudist holiday.
Maybe that's next on the list, yeah.
I love talking to Jessie about the trips that have inspired her, and it got me thinking about how to make a solo adventure as fulfilling as possible. Here are some things that I've learned from a decade of taking solo trips. I think it's really important to keep some kind of record when you're traveling. It doesn't need to be a notebook, but when you're having experiences alone, it's really nice to record them in some way. It could be recording sounds on your phone, taking photos, doing drawings, or just keeping mementos of tickets and menus and receipts. When you get home and time has passed, these things can be really powerful to jog your memory. The other thing that's important if you're looking to be inspired is just to get a bit lost in a place. And I think that's another brilliant thing about going away by yourself, is that you can just go where the wind takes you on a whim. When you're not hurrying around trying to follow a plan, or even worse, someone else's plan, you can notice all the little details instead. And finally, I love to immerse myself in a place. It might be reading a book that's set there, it might be listening to music, it might be eating local delicacies or just chatting to local people. But whatever you can do to really throw yourself into the place that you're visiting and let it seep into your psyche will pay dividends when it comes to feeling inspired back at home. That's all from me. Thank you so much for listening to Ticket for One. I'll be back next week, or you can follow me on Instagram at Kate Wills Writes. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do rate and review it, as it really helps other people to find it. And I'd love it if you wanted to share your own experiences of solo travel with me, or any questions you might have about it, by emailing ticketforonepodcast@gmail.com. I hope to see you next week, and goodbye.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.